Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast. It's Monday, July 25th. Are we entering a new era of nonviolent civil disobedience in this country in support of abortion rights? In a minute, we'll talk to a member of Congress from New Jersey who is among those arrested in front of the Supreme Court in one such demonstration. It comes as voters in Kansas next week will have abortion rights on the ballot in the first voter referendum on the issue since the Supreme Court reversed Roe versus Wade last month. The state legislature in Indiana is nearing a vote on banning almost all abortions there. There are reports of more U.S. women going to Mexico to obtain legal abortions. Did you know that the Supreme Court in that country recently declared abortion a national right? So it's not just people from there coming here for an opportunity to have a better life anymore, which is the usual narrative about crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. We'll talk now to New Jersey Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman. As I said, she was one of a number of members of Congress arrested in a nonviolent protest at the Supreme Court for abortion rights last week. She is also a member of the Homeland Security Committee. And we'll talk about that with what we've been learning from the January 6th committee about how pre-planned some of the violence was on that day by white supremacist and militia groups, other white supremacist domestic terror threats, which the FBI, even under Trump, labeled the number one domestic terror threat, plus the attack last week on Republican New York gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin, the arrest of a person recently for plotting to assassinate Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and more. Can our country keep this from escalating further? And you may remember the Congresswoman got COVID after hiding out on January 6th in a room with many congressional colleagues. She later blamed the Republicans in the room who refused to wear masks even in that situation. Democrat Bonnie Watson Coleman represents New Jersey's 12th Congressional District, covering roughly from the Plainfield and New Brunswick areas in the north down through Princeton and the Trenton area in the south. Congresswoman, we always appreciate when you come on with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here with you. Thank you for asking me.
Let's begin with your arrest last Tuesday at the abortion rights demonstration. You and 16 other members of Congress is the number that I have. Would you describe in your own words what that protest was and why you were all arrested?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very concerned, obviously. We're very disappointed in the decision that the Supreme Court made that is limiting access to safe and affordable abortions or health care for women. We're very concerned about things that we've heard coming out of one of the Supreme Court jurors' mouth, and particularly Clarence Thomas, that even suggests that for the same reasons that they overturned this abortion decision, they can move in and overturn other sort of precedents that have been established and decisions that have been made that impact our privacy and our rights even more. And so while we are trying to manage this legislatively, because the House has twice now voted on a bill to preserve and protect women's access to abortion and health care to that extent, we must continue to keep the concern and the urgency of the situation at the forefront of everyone's mind. And so one way of doing that, obviously, is to demonstrate, to walk along with people who share that same core value that a woman should have autonomy over her body and that abortion is health care. On so many different levels, we're seeing how it's affecting the safety and security of women and even little girls. And it is absurd that in 2022, we're having to revisit this issue. And so what we did was joined and the organizers in marching to stand up for a woman's rights and to call out that we have this work to do and that this government of by and for the people can change things if the people collectively act.
So it was a sit-in. You sat down and blocked traffic. Was that the reason, technically, for the arrests?
Well, we blocked traffic. All of us didn't sit down, obviously, but we stood in place, and we were given our warnings, and we were told that if we didn't move, we'd be arrested. And so there were several of the protesters who started out in front of the Capitol, who maintained their positions and were arrested.
Would you call your action nonviolent civil disobedience in the style of Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement?
And the great John Lewis, absolutely. It was civil. There was no violence. There was no even hint of violence or tension on that level. It was simply exercising our right to speak out and to demonstrate and to show that the will of the people is very strong as it relates to this issue.
What was your experience?
So definitely.
What was your experience mm-hmm. under arrest like? How were you and your colleagues treated?
Oh, you know, let me just say that it was nothing like the very brave people who were arrested in the 60s during the civil rights movement. The officers were all very, very polite. We were held in an area on the grounds of the Capitol, and then we were processed. So it took us a quite a while to be processed. And so it was inconvenient because it interfered with other things that we needed to do. I, for one, needed to debate an issue on the floor. I couldn't do it because we couldn't get processed in time. So it wasn't frightening. It actually helped us to even bond more with those other non-elected individuals who were standing up for a woman's autonomy over her body and demanding that government get out of our bedrooms and get out of our bodies.
Do you expect this to be the beginning of a wave of such actions?
I think that we have to do whatever it is that is necessary, Brian, right now, to continue to show the urgency and to show the collective will of the citizens of this country, the people of this country. Overwhelmingly, they support access to a safe and affordable abortion. Overwhelmingly, they support, beyond that, just the notion of a woman's autonomy over her body. And so I do believe that this issue is also the beginning of the Supreme Court's foray into other areas that are similarly situated. And so the Supreme Court needs to see the will of the people. I am certain that there will be continuous demonstrations of one form or another, civil, nonviolent, and legal.
You know, Mitch McConnell has said if the Republicans control Congress next year, it's possible that they would enact a national abortion ban, not just the state-by-state system that the Supreme Court ruling established. Are you concerned they would actually go that far?
Yes. Yes. The one thing that I have seen coming from Republicans in these last 2 years and even the last 3 years is that they're willing to embrace a very, very right-wing, restrictive agenda because that's what the donors that support them, that have been working on bringing us to this point for decades, want. And so it's not about what your core beliefs are. It's not about what the rule of law is. It's not about what the will of the people is, the collective in the United States of America. It is playing to these very extreme, controlling right-wing extremists. And that is very concerning. That is very concerning from a privacy perspective. That is very concerning from my rights perspective. And it's antithetical to what a democracy is supposed to be. And I always had assurance that even when it wasn't always working in the way I wanted it to, that this was the fairest form of government and that we had mechanisms to change things that were lawful and that were nonviolent and that responded to the will of the people.
Aaliyah.
And we don't have that right now.
In Astoria, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman of New Jersey. Hello, Aaliyah.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Now, I've been a clinic escort for the past 7 years. I'm 27 years old. I've been a clinic escort in New York City. I've also am a New York abortion case fund manager. So I've been in this fight for a couple of years now, and I know that we've been screaming that this is that this post-Roe world could happen. And now that it's here, I'm kind of afraid for my fellow activists who are still fighting, like what kind of protections do we have? Because I'm helping women from Texas fly to New York to get care. And I know that it's a really real, real circumstance that we're not, that 50 states, we're going to have abortion bans. So I want to know, where can we protect the people who are still fighting, who are still taking women across state lines to get support? And
thank you for, first of all, thank you for the work that you do. God bless you. This is important work, and I believe that it is the right thing that you are doing. We're very concerned about those who are navigators or escorts, whatever you want to call them. We even passed a law saying that in the House of Representatives, to protect those who are engaged in helping women to navigate where they can go. We're examining those areas right now, Maria. We're going to hold, as a matter of fact, the Caucus on Black Women and Girls is proposing to have sort of a public meeting on how we can go about creating safe networks for women to access abortions in other states. But this is very real. There are states that are encouraging people to get into the business of other people, to make assumptions about other people, to turn people in. This is like a vigilante form of activity that we have to combat. But we need a Senate to work with us. And we need the people who are impacted, women in particular, but also just families in general, to be speaking up and letting the Senate know that we must engage in the protection of a woman's right and those who provide the health care and those who provide the transportation and those who provide the direction, the counseling, and everything. This is not going to be a quick fix. This is something that we're going to have to keep tackling, and we're committed to doing that. Democrats are committed to doing that. The House of Representatives has done it. Now we have to get the Senate to do it, and we need to get Republicans on board, because even in their states and in their districts, a woman's access to a safe abortion is a right that they that is supported by the majority of people in this country.
Linda in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. First of all, thank you, Brian, Larry. You are wonderful. And I want to thank the congressperson for getting out there and taking a stand. For those of us who are a little past marching age, I want to say the following. I'm a recently retired physician who will never, ever forget doing an out elective in North Carolina and seeing a 14-year-old girl come in with fever of 104, shaking chills, and basically sepsis, life-threatening sepsis from a true coat hanger type abortion. She had to have a hysterectomy in the middle of the night to save her life. Indelibly in my brain. Abortion is part of the spectrum of healthcare, and nobody but the doctor and the woman has a right to deal with it. Thank you.
Linda, thank you. Congresswoman, what would you say to that? And of course, that just chilling story that she told about the 14-year-old having an emergency hysterectomy because of symptoms from what she called a coat hanger style abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we already see the case of the 10-year-old from Ohio who was raped. The officials there started out by denying it and calling it a hoax. They had to acknowledge eventually that it was real, and they arrested the alleged perpetrator. She had to cross state lines into Indiana to get her abortion, this 10-year-old. And what was the response of the authorities in Indiana? It was to investigate the doctor. Wow.
I think that this speaks to the dangerous times that we're currently finding ourselves. And I agree with what the caller said about supporting all the organizations. I also think that on top of that, we need to, and she means support them with financial resources so that they can expand their opportunities to protect women. I think New Jersey and New York and places like that need to be able to provide the kind of services that are going to be required, because we're states where you have access to safe and abortion upon request, as long as you are your doctor and you agree. I think that also we are cognizant of the fact that there are situations, ectopic pregnancies, bad abortions, etc., that are life threatening to women. And so that's why the president signed his executive order saying that emergency health care must not be disrupted, must not be interrupted, and the healthcare providers must not be, dealt with as if they're violating a law. However, you know, we have to enforce what we say. So we've got to make sure that the resources are going into those states to protect those situations. And in the meantime, we got to make sure that there are safe corridors for women to and young girls. This 10-year-old, I cannot imagine, even with ultimately having the pregnancy terminated, the trauma that this young girl is facing at 10 years old. I have a 9-year-old granddaughter. It is incomprehensible to me. So I hope that not only did we take care of that aspect, but we provide the kind of mental health counseling that she's going to need.
Let's turn to the January 6th committee revelations, including last week's minute-by-minute breakdown of what President Trump did, pouring gasoline on the fire with his tweets, even after knowing what was happening, and refusing to make a statement to call it off, even after the urgent pleas of his children, Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and others. Congresswoman, since you were in hiding during that time in the room in which you got COVID, I'm curious if you were watching the hearing Thursday night, thinking about where you were at various ones of those moments.
Hey, Brian, I've watched every one of these hearings, and every time they show you a video clip of what was happening inside and the violence and what was happening outside and the number of people that were outside, it re-traumatizes me. Because, you know, when we were inside, we weren't always in a space where we could see what was happening. We could hear, like, where I was held up first before being moved to the sort of collective room, I could hear them in the corridors. And I could hear the stomping and the loud chants and things of that nature. But I still didn't recognize the degree to which we had been breached and how scary it was. So I've watched every one of the hearings, and they've been perfectly set up so that we are seeing a picture from the action moving back to the actual causes as to why that occurred in that manner on January the 6th. And so this last hearing was very illuminating about how we got to that point, what was happening in the White House. People referred to President Trump's inaction. I think that President Trump had done everything he needed to create that scenario that took place on the Hill, and he was watching it being executed. And so that isn't as if he were paralyzed and couldn't do anything. That was an intentionality on his part to let it play out, even to the point of putting his then vice president in peril. He didn't care about this government. He didn't care about the safety and security of the members of Congress or the members of the Senate. Even those who had been loyal to him, they were running for their life on that day because they were scared. He doesn't care. He just is absent any sense of morality. And all he wanted to do was to hold on to power. And to me, that is antithetical to what this country is and has been. Even, you know, even during the Watergate hearings, what Nixon did in his cohort seems like a walk in the park to what Donald Trump was fomenting and planning and collaborating and expecting. It was anything he could get done. Steal election, steal vote, lie, and then incite. And that's what he did.
For you as a Homeland Security Committee member, where does January 6th fit into a larger picture of domestic terrorism?
Well, you mentioned it earlier in your opening about the FBI saying our greatest threat is domestic terrorism. I don't think that we had been giving that sufficient attention. We need to understand very, very carefully all that that implies, all the groups, all the sort of ideologies and methodologies that implies, because that is our greatest threat. Our greatest threat is from within inside of our country. So not only do we need to get a handle on it from Homeland Security's perspective, working with the DHS and the Secret Service and every other entity that has a piece in it, in this, but then the containment, the intelligence gathering is one thing, but we need to be investing in trying to change the sort of emotional dynamic of our country right now. You know, we're not love your brother, love your sister, be your sister or your brother's keepers. We're not that anymore. Right now, we are like a tinderbox. We don't trust one another. We don't like one another. We accentuate the negative and the differences as opposed to the collective things that we share. And we have to get back to healing. We really do. And that is why the January 6th committee is so vitally important, because in a non-political, calm, very succinct way, they have used the information shared with them from the people who were closest to him, people who worked for him, the new staffers, the old staffers, the legal staffers, all of them, to show us the threat that existed under his leadership to our democracy. And so we'll be looking for the recommendations that the January 6th committee will ultimately make in terms of legislative initiatives to ensure that things of this ilk don't happen again. And then we'll be looking for how we move through other departments, whether Health and Human Services or whatever, to ensure that we are addressing the sickness that is so pervasive in this country.
Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman from New Jersey, thank you so much for being with us. Stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.